Welcome to Design Downtime, the podcast where we celebrate the joys of living a balanced creative life. I'm your host, Guy Siegel, a design director in Toronto, Canada, and I invite you to join me on this journey as we redefine what it means to be a successful design professional. Let's break free from the shackles of hustle culture and embrace the full spectrum of human experience, because life is too precious to be spent only in pursuit of productivity. Today, I'm excited to be talking with Ben Callahan. Ben founded Sparkbox in 2009 with a mission to build a better web. He has helped lead and grow the organization while they work alongside clients like Gap, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and Stanford University. He's focused his energy most recently on developing a maturity model for design systems, articulating the anatomy of design systems, and chronicling his findings about workplace culture in the tech space. When not knee-deep in these explorations with others, Ben is a father, partner, poet, and home barista. His personal motto is, stay in learning mode, and this helps him to remember that every interaction is an opportunity to grow. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you so much, Guy. It's an honor to be here.
It's a pleasure having you here. It truly is. You're going to talk to us about coffee.
I'm going to do my best.
I love to start these with the origin story.
Yeah.
Where does your relationship with coffee begin?
I remember when my parents would make coffee in the mornings, and I loved the smell. Like most people, I think, when that coffee starts brewing, people just love that smell. And I remember as a young kid coming into the kitchen because of the smell, and my dad giving me a sip. And my first thought was how terrible it tasted and how it just smelled so good but tasted so bad. And that, I think, started me at a very young age being really curious about this substance that people, adults around me, seemed to really need and love. And it's funny because I was on a mission as I got older to build community. And that's just something I think personally that I love to do. I'm somebody who needs good people around me. I think we all need that, whether we acknowledge it or not. But so I've sort of been on a mission to build that in my life for a long time. And I think I saw, as I got a little older, what was happening in kind of the third wave coffee movement, right? Where it was like coffee houses opening up across, at least here in the States, you know, they sort of became this place for people to gather and kind of have community. And I was really drawn to the community side of coffee before I actually appreciated the taste. And once I got sucked into the community, then I was on a journey to kind of go back to that original smell that I remembered vividly and figure out how could I create a coffee that tasted as good as it smelled. And that was kind of the origin story for me. I remember my curiosity around that kind of pushed me down a more scientific approach to coffee. And I discovered this guy, David Schomer is his name. And he was a chemist, and he created a coffee brand called Espresso Vivace. They're based out in Seattle. And I got his book, and he's a bit of an eccentric guy, but he was a scientist, and he just applied the concept of science to the coffee world. And he kind of changed coffee in the US very dramatically by doing all kinds of things like actually measuring the temperature of the water inside of your espresso group head where the water meets the coffee, instead of measuring it back somewhere else in the system, you know, at the boiler or whatever. He was like drilling holes in the grinders so that he could put fans, old computer fans, blowing air through these grinders, because what he wanted was the freshest coffee he could get. So he would grind on demand. Now we have special grinders that are designed to, you know, on demand, you only grind what you need. But those didn't exist. So these grinders were overheating and like kind of ruining the taste of the beans, right? He was doing all of this scientific work on the problem of coffee. And when I read his book, he said the same thing. He was like, I loved the smell. I didn't like the taste. I wanted to figure out how to make coffee that tasted as good as it smelled. And I knew I had found my guy. So that's kind of my origin story, you know?
That's interesting. So I'm really curious to know what about that sort of his scientific method was speaking to you.
I think it's the well, you said it in my intro that I like to stay in learning mode. And so I think in my life, if I look across the different areas where I've had interest or passion, I'm never satisfied with the status quo. I'm always trying to figure out how can I make that coffee a little bit better? How can I write a slightly better poem? You know, how can I, if you push it back over into work world, how do I do my work better? You know, and so I think his approach was about, you know, sort of analyzing every tiny variable in the brewing process and trying to optimize every variable so that at the end result, you had the most amazing thing in the cup, you know? And for me, I think that was appealing on one level of just excellence, but on another, there's like a ritual that kind of comes with that, you know, when you slow yourself down in the morning enough to actually care about getting the right weight, the right ratio of bean and water. When you actually take the time to kind of dial in the grind and make sure that you're getting the right amount of flow of water over time through the beans, you know, there's just this ritual to it. And I think for me, it's a really nice, almost meditative way to start my mornings.
As you said, you are constantly in learning mode. I'm assuming you started experimenting yourself.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, to start, I had just a very simple home brewing, like sort of traditional drip brewing machine, nothing fancy. But pretty quickly, I learned that with not that much investment, you can get yourself a pretty nice kettle. You can get yourself a very simple pour over system, you know, like a V60 is kind of where I started, or a V60 and a Chemex were kind of the two that I started with as kind of opposite ends of a spectrum in terms of well, that's not fully true. Opposite ends, but two sort of paths on the spectrum of pour over brewing. And so that let me experiment pretty quickly. I didn't have a great grinder at the beginning, but that let me play around with a bunch of variables like what temperature and, you know, to a certain extent, how fine or how coarse, and did I rinse my paper filters or not, you know, and, you know, like, did I aerate, you know, how did I handle the pouring itself? How high was I pouring from? How much, you know, agitation was I creating in the actual brew? So all these other variables that you can start to experiment with, even just with something so simple like that. And I eventually got interested in methods that are being used to brew in other countries, you know, and so I bought myself a little Belletti, you know, stovetop mocha pot, which is like a traditional kind of Italian way of making your espresso. I started playing with that, which is it's for the price, it's a phenomenal, like really robust cup of coffee, hard to beat, you know. I remember getting a French press and starting to sort of experiment with that as an option. I started digging in and looking at flat bottom brewers, you know, so I have a couple different options there as opposed to more like a conical approach to again, this is like way into the weeds, man. So I'm sorry. But then I got, I recognized like, man, I've got to get a good grinder because everything that I was reading at the time was saying you should be spending at least as much on your grinder as you are on all of your brewing equipment. And so, you know, like when you break it down to the science of it, it makes sense because you're taking this bean and you're kind of crushing it. And if you don't do that in a way that's uniform, you're sort of extracting at the like tiniest level. You're extracting or over extracting or under extracting based on how large those little particles are. So what you want is uniformity in the grind so that you can actually have an even extraction through every point of contact where the water touches the bean, you know? So again, it's like, that's all happening at this, like almost like an atomic level, right? But yet at the end result, if you've got a bunch of big chunks with a bunch of tiny fines in there, you're going to get a weird tasting cup, you know? So like to invest a little bit more in a nicer grinder, I bought a hand grinder, which is if you're interested in coffee and you want to have a higher quality grind without spending the money for a, you know, a mechanized high quality grinder. You can spend thousands of dollars on these things. You can spend about $150 to get a really nice hand grinder. And there's a bunch of options out there. Maybe Guy, I'll send you a bunch of links to coffee gear so you can put it all in the notes. But that got me to a place where then I could like really start to see the difference in these brew methods, you know? So that was a lot of fun. After I kind of like figured a lot out with those more manual kind of immersion processes like this, I started to get interested in espresso more. And so I bought myself something called a Flair espresso maker, which is a, you know, I didn't have the money to spend on a big expensive espresso machine like I would have loved to have done at the time, but I wanted to learn about espresso. And so I bought this thing. It's literally, you can make a brilliant espresso with this, but it is a very manual process. So there's no pumps. It's literally, you know, you are basically like, you've got sort of it's like a cylinder that's heavy steel. So it holds temperature. And so you preheat that cylinder and then you add in, you know, hot water into the cylinder, and you put a little plunger on top, and to the bottom, you've secured a little mini portafilter with your espresso tamped and everything right in there. And then you use a lever to sort of create the pressure to sort of force water through the coffee puck. And that's sort of the unique thing about espresso, is that it's the pressure is the thing that's different, right? You're creating ideally sort of 9 atmospheres of pressure, right? is kind of what you want. These days it's much more fancy, you know, it's like pressure profiling where you're changing the amount of pressure over time. So you're seeing different types of, you know, flavors emerge at different parts of the brewing process. I mean, it's a science. Again, it's a rabbit hole, but the Flair is incredible because it's not that expensive and it lets you play with every variable in the espresso making process. So again, it was like an opportunity for me to just dive in and really understand what's happening. And not long after I got that, then I wanted to learn, now it's like the art, right? I want to learn how to pour latte art. I want to steam milk in a way that's like silky and delicious. And so I bought something called a Bellman stovetop steamer, again, because I couldn't afford a big espresso machine. And it was just a little, basically it's like a little mini boiler you put on your stovetop with water. It's got a valve on the side and you turn a knob and steam comes out. So I would get this Bellman thing pumping, you know, and it's like hissing over in the corner. And then I would get my Flair out and I would brew a shot of espresso. I would steam my milk and then I would work on pouring latte art, you know, just in the kitchen there every morning. So that's kind of like the journey has evolved, you know. And then of course I've gotten nicer grinders and I've gotten a full on espresso machine, and like it just continues, you know.
The process you learned or experimented with it's a very intricate process. When did the flavor come in for you? Because we started from you were appreciating the aroma. When did you start enjoying drinking coffee?
Oh man, that's such a good question, because I totally left that out. I think it was when I got that hand grinder is when I started to like really appreciate the flavors. You know, I can't over explain or overestimate the impact that a grinder has on a good cup of coffee. I mean, it just makes the biggest difference. Maybe more so than all the other variables. If I had to pick one thing, you know, I would brew my coffee with a good grinder through a paper towel instead of, you know, like whatever else I needed. So it makes a big difference. Well, that's not the big. So, okay. The other thing that I've learned in this process is that water is like almost all of what you're drinking, right? It's like 90-some% of what you're drinking in a cup of coffee is the water you put in. Of course, the quality of the water you use is as important as the quality of the beans, right? And so maybe more so, right? And so now there's companies out there that you buy a packet of minerals that you add to distilled water. So you take everything out of the water, and then you put just the perfect amount of minerals into the water. So this is what I do. So I have a subscription to a company called Third Wave Water, where they send me a dozen little packs of minerals that are all designed to go into 1 gallon of distilled water. And then I have kind of like the perfect water for coffee. And they have different profiles, some for espressos, some for pour overs or filters. And then, you know, it's not expensive to do this. Of course, you've got like plastic jugs you're dealing with and stuff and all of that. So there's other repercussions, but the impact there is pretty huge for the flavor too.
What is your sort of coffee ritual these days?
Yeah, it changes for me. I go through little seasons, you know. For the last month or so, I've been on a French press kick. And so, and partly it depends on what beans and roasts that I have, you know, currently on hand. And, you know, certain coffees do better with certain brewing styles and stuff. So I've been enjoying French press lately. And so every morning I come down, I weigh out my beans. I grind a few because I usually will toss two or three into the grinder and let that grind right away, because every grinder has a little bit of retention, which means some of the beans that you ground the day before are still sort of sitting in the mechanism, right? So I grind a little bit just to kind of flush out any old stale grounds that may be in there. And then I'll measure out my amount. I'll spritz that with a touch of water before it goes into the grinder, because grinders also create a lot of static. And so a little spritz of water reduces that static quite a bit, helps you have less retention in the grind. So that'll go into the grinder. I've added water to the kettle at this point. So my third wave water is in my kettle and that's warming. And I usually, the roast I'm drinking now it's about I would say around 205 is kind of the temperature Fahrenheit that I enjoy it at. with my French press, this roast I'm doing 17:1 is the ratio. So I'll weigh out, you know, the amount of coffee that I want for the day, 30, 35 grams, and then I'll multiply by 17 to come up with the amount of water I want to add to that. I let it sit for about 4.5 minutes. And then with a French press, you're not really supposed to actually press. So, you know, I get it in there, get it set, and give it a quick stir, let it sit for 4.5 minutes, and then just pour through the filter with the press still raised. This helps it kind of not disturb the grounds that have settled at that point. So it's nice. Yeah, tasty.
Your first introduction was, as you said, you were a child, right? And this was kind of, my interpretation of what you were saying is that it was like a glimpse into the world of the adults.
Yeah, that's great.
Yes, a mystery of like, oh, this is what something that the grown-ups are doing. And then later on, you sort of got acquainted with the community aspect of drinking coffee together. Everything you described, the very elaborate process of experimentation and tinkering and crafting and finding the perfect cup of coffee or the perfect process for you. I'm assuming that all still happens at home. How do you see coffee drinking outside of the house in that, again, that community setting?
Yeah, that's great. Well, I would say that there's two things to answer that. One is when I have people here, the first thing I do is say, can I make you a cup of coffee? You know, because I love to share it with people too, you know, and so if I've got, I'll warm up my espresso machine, I'll pour latte art for folks. If it's warm out, we'll do an affogato, I'll pull a shot over some vanilla ice cream, and it's just like the best dessert you'll ever have. I mean, we'll do cold brews, we'll do iced coffees, you know, I mean, all of it, we can do it all. And, people just, I think the idea that you'd get something that is as good or better than what you can get in a coffee shop out of somebody's home is like exciting for people, you know? So I literally tell them like, what would your order be if you were at your favorite coffee shop, you know, and I'll make something like that for them. And it's a lot of fun to see. I love that. So that is a side of the community that I still enjoy right here in my own home. My youngest also loves hot chocolate. And so sometimes in the winter, I'll make a hot chocolate with some latte art on top. And that's a really fun little morning ritual that we have together. Out in public, I'm actually not a coffee snob, you know, so a lot of folks who are into this world won't drink coffee, you know, unless it's X, Y, or Z. I'm sort of like, I love a good cup of diner brew too, you know, that's been sitting on the hot plate for a long time. It's got, I don't know what it is, but there's something about that that I also really enjoy. So the place where I struggle, so out in public, I'll go out, I'll enjoy a cup at, you know, Waffle House or wherever I am, you know. Of course, I have my favorite coffee shops. I just have to shout out the best coffee in Dayton, Ohio. It comes from a place called Press. They have their own little roasting company, Woodboro, that is just literally some of the most amazing coffee you'll ever try. So I go there. My business partner and I have met there since they opened. You know, we go once a week at least, and we've been for years. It's kind of just, that's our mainstay. And I meet folks there. I have really good friendships of people that I met just because we were both standing in line at Press or enjoying a, you know, a cappuccino in the morning and just said hello, you know. So that's an aspect of it. And I mentioned that I'm not a coffee snob. I guess there's one little exception. I love the sort of high-end coffee, you know, a company or a barista who really knows what they're doing and can sort of, you know, like create something special for you. That's obviously fun. And I love that kind of the diner, just like, give me the dive cup, you know, like I'm in. But the stuff in the middle is where I struggle, where they're sort of like half doing some of the stuff they should be doing, but not full in, and sort of positioning it as if it's like a higher end thing. That's where I struggle. And those are the cups that I have a harder time with. So for some reason, I like the ends of the spectrum, but the middle is where I struggle.
It sounds like you gravitate towards, I would say, it sounds pretentious, but authenticity.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Either full measures or none at all.
Yeah. Or like, you know, it's not that they don't have a process at the diner, right? Like, that's the process that especially those of us kind of in the U.S. have kind of grown up with, you know, all the little, yeah, I mean, so there is definitely a process there. It all has a similar taste and feel to it. And man, it's sometimes hard to beat, you know. It's like, I don't know how I could replicate that cup here at home. You know, it's like I need to have the classic kind of bun, you know, burners, you know, going, and it needs to sit for a little while. And those coffee pots are probably, you know, 20 years old, right? Like, there's flavor embedded in the glass, you know what I'm saying? So it's hard to like, that takes time to sort of earn that flavor, you know?
You mentioned earlier that as you were experimenting, you started getting exposed to implements from other countries. Have you been to those other countries and experienced the coffee culture over there?
Yeah, not as much as I would like, but every time that I travel, one of the things that I do is try to look up kind of the local, the good coffee that's local. In Italy, you know, I've been to, and in Europe, across Europe, I've been to many coffee shops where, you know, the tradition is more European. It's the little espresso in the afternoon. It's the cappuccino in the morning. It's, you know, literally popping in just to stand at the bar and drink my sugar and espresso in just a moment. And then I'm out the door, you know, and I love that sort of feeling too. There's a little spot in Manhattan that I love to go to that is more than just coffee, but they make a really good cappuccino in the mornings. So I do try to find the spots, you know, around the world where I end up. I have done a couple little coffee tours that have been pretty touristy, you know, in places like Costa Rica or that sort of thing, where they have a strong coffee culture from a different perspective, you know, growing and roasting and that sort of thing. So, but yeah, there's so much there. I mean, I haven't done anything with roasting yet. And so that's sort of, for me, I think like the next big open question is how could I kind of work my way into that space a bit too and just take it a little further left in the process, you know?
When you're making your wonderful cup of coffee at home, what is your ritual for drinking it? Are you focusing on a coffee? Is it part of other activities?
Yeah, I have kind of a ritual in the mornings where I come down from, you know, from upstairs, and I do the coffee thing, you know, what I described. And, you know, sometimes it's not French press, right? Like, a lot of times it's an espresso or whatever, but whatever that is for that season. Usually I'm taking that to sit someplace in the house where I can do a little reading. I like to kind of I don't like to jump right into the day, you know? So I've been sharing this little idea with a bunch of my friends lately, but I'm also not great at reading like start to finish a book. So I end up reading lots of books at the same time, and I'll read like a little bit from each one. And it's cool because it kind of connects, helps you kind of connect the dots between things you wouldn't necessarily connect, you know? I was doing that exact thing this morning, and I was reading a little bit about botany and also about old school systems thinking. And so like those two things didn't necessarily ever come to mind for me as things that I would have connected, but there's some interesting connections. And so I wrote a little article this morning because of that, you know, so that sort of like routine of I'm sort of drinking my coffee and really enjoying that part of my day, but also sort of like soaking in some other thinking, you know, and that's how I tend to start my days. Then a little review of what's on the agenda for the day. And then I dive in, you know.
Do you have specific times of the day other than the morning coffee? Do you have other times of the day where you traditionally sit down with a cup?
Yeah, I try to keep most of my coffee consumption happening, you know, early in the day. I'll drink, you know, two or three cups usually in the morning if I'm doing a French press, or I'll make myself two smaller, you know, espresso drinks if I need to in the mornings. And then usually about 12:30 or 1, I'm ready for another cup, and it's usually an espresso, or sometimes, you know, if I'm out, I'll grab just like a more traditional brew, cup of brew or whatever. But yeah. Not too much after 2 p.m.
How is the rest of the family taking in this hobby of yours, your partner, your kids?
Yeah, my kids don't appreciate the coffee thing yet. Although I think if I put enough chocolate in there, they might be in. So they'll, you know, they're not super into that. But I mentioned the hot chocolate, so that there's a little bit of a connection there. My partner loves coffee, and in fact would... her favorite thing is to wake up to the smell of it, right? So I think there's a nice little overlap there. And it's, you know, as I mentioned, I really enjoy the process. So there's a nice little routine where I can kind of get up in the morning and go down and do the coffee routine. And that creates the ambiance that she likes to kind of wake up to. And so it's a good pairing. Yeah.
Is there still something in the process of making coffee that you haven't conquered yet, that you're looking to get better at?
So many things, Guy. I mean, I, you know, with espresso, there's like the challenge of like preparing the actual coffee to be extracted. And so I've got all these tools and this whole process around espresso, which is as much about sort of preparing this coffee bed, you know, to sort of have a lot of pressure applied to it. The problem is like water will find the path of least resistance. So if you haven't prepared your coffee well, especially in the context of espresso, you end up with what are called fissures. So the water will just like force its way all through one area. And you'll take a look at that puck afterwards and you'll see there's like even dry areas, you know? And so that's probably worse than even having bad grounds, you know. It's all of that coffee right there where it's wet is way over extracted, and none of the rest has been extracted at all. So I think there's like that preparation stage is really important in espresso. I mean, I'm still learning about the differences in the roast, you know. So like, what does it mean? What should I expect from a washed or versus a natural versus a honey, you know, roast it, you know, so just there's like different ways to prep beans before they get roasted. And that process has a big impact on what you're getting. So I think I'm still learning about that. There's a lot to unpack there. And there's a lot to unpack about like what region beans have come from. So I think there's just so many coffees to explore that it's like, it feels like it's, you know, never ending. In some ways, it's like wine, you know, in that the region and the, you know, the variety and all of that kind of, that's very similar, actually. So I feel like there's always something to learn, right? Mm-hmm. And I mentioned I'm interested in roasting, you know, it's not, you can do some sort of inexpensive roasting approaches, but man, there's just so much to it to do it well. And, you know, some of the ways that you go about doing that which gives you access to all of the variables in roasting are kind of expensive, you know, so I haven't made that leap yet, but I've at one point I considered buying just like a very old school approach, you know, where you literally just, you have a, it's essentially just a pot with a lid that you're kind of like manually kind of moving over a heat source just to like really take it back, you know, and that's kind of what I've done with coffee is like just start with the very basics and sort of slowly evolve my understanding over time. But so who knows? And then I got to grow beans, you know, so I need land somewhere, right? Oh, man.
Well, this conversation is makes it clear that I need to, you know, get in a car, head down to Ohio, and I need to taste your coffee.
Yeah, you do, man. Get your butt down here. That's not actually that far, too, so we'll have to make that happen.
We should.
Yeah.
Where can people find you? Not necessarily to come and have a coffee, but where can people find you online?
Yeah, the easiest spot is probably my website, bencallahan.com. I am also, you know, on LinkedIn quite a bit these days. I'm out on X or Twitter or whatever you call it. I've got a Mastodon account, all that kind of stuff, but I'm probably most present on LinkedIn, ironically, these days. And they could also join the question on a weekly basis if they wanted to, because that would be a great way to get connected. I would love to hear from their experiences if they have some to share. So I can give you a few links and you can share those with folks. That would be great.
Happy to.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Ben, and telling us all about your coffee obsession.
My pleasure, Guy. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
This is all for this episode of Design Downtime. Thank you for joining me. And until next time, I hope you enjoy your downtime.